Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for February 5th, 2013. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm speaking with Felix Randau about a paper that appears in this week's issue of Science Signaling on a mechanism by which Salmonella is targeted for degradation in the cells that it infects. Autophagy is a process by which cells degrade components that they no longer need or have become damaged or dysfunctional. Autophagy can also be used to generate biochemical building blocks that can help a cell survive times of nutrient deprivation. Autophagy can also be used to destroy intracellular pathogens like bacteria that enter the cell. Proteins or pathogens that need to be disposed of are collected in subcellular structures called autophagosomes. These autophagosomes then fuse with lysosomes, which contain the enzymes that digest the contents of the autophagosome. There are two basic types of autophagy. Bulk autophagy is non-selective. It occurs in response to starvation, and its primary function is to recycle the biomolecular building blocks that can help a cell survive those lean times. Selective autophagy, on the other hand, occurs when certain proteins or other cellular constituents are specifically marked for degradation. Randau's group collaborated with Yunyu Shi's lab at the University of Science and Technology of China on a structural study that appears in this issue of Science Signaling. In this paper, they report on how a receptor that mediates selective autophagy recognizes a signal from organelles that have been damaged by the intracellular pathogen Salmonella. Randau spoke to me from the MRC Laboratory of Molecular Biology in Cambridge. Dr. Randau, welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
Thank you.
There are two basic types of autophagy, selective and non-selective. How are these two different types of autophagy initiated?
Well, actually, selective and non-selective autophagy, they have a lot in common. They both rely on the very same membrane-generating machinery that produces the immediate precursor of autophagosomes, which we like to call phagophores or isolation membranes, and which in electron microphotographs one can see as these beautiful crescent-shaped and very characteristic membrane structures. Now, the difference between selective and non-selective autophagy lies in the way how cytosol becomes entrapped by growing isolation membranes. The cytosol can be taken up either in bulk and completely stochastically, as is the case during periods of starvation, when cells induce autophagy simply to recycle cytosol for its nutritional value. And that is where the term autophagy actually came from. It means self-eating. Now, in contrast, during selective autophagy, cytosol is not taken up in bulk because there are cargo receptors which ensure that isolation membranes engulf only such cargo that is marked by what I like to call eat-me signals. And there are a number of different eat-me signals, but the best known one is comprised of polyubiquitin.
One of the functions of autophagy is to destroy intracellular pathogens and the organelles that have become damaged by those pathogens. How does the autophagic machinery detect pathogens? Does it detect the pathogens themselves, or does it detect the damage that they've caused to the cell?
Actually, it's both. So autophagy is an antimicrobial effector mechanism, and it is therefore an integrated part of the innate immune system. Now, to me, innate immunity always seems to rely on as many lines of defense as possible. So in the case of cytosol invading bacteria, we know of at least three sequential lines of defense that induce autophagy. The first one is mediated by pattern recognition receptors, which survey the content of phagosomes. And these detect bacteria directly. Good example for those are toll-like receptors, which induce an autophagy-related process called LC3-assisted phagocytosis, or LAP, to enhance the antibacterial properties of phagosomes. And the second line of defense relies on the detection of damage, which is caused by bacteria trying to escape from their vesicles into the cytosol. And here the bacteria are not detected directly at all. Cells simply infer the presence of bacteria from the massive damage that they cause when they try to squeeze out of a vesicle and into the cytosol. Here the eat-me signal for selective autophagy is not attached to the bacterium, but to the damaged membrane, and the bacteria are simply a bycatch, if you want. And then the third line of defense relies on the coating of bacteria with polyubiquitin, that canonical eat-me signal that I mentioned earlier. The coating of bacteria with ubiquitin relies on an enzyme called an E3 ubiquitin ligase, but it is presently still completely unclear what exactly this enzyme recognizes.
How do cells detect damage that's caused by pathogens? And are there different pathways for detecting different pathogens, or is there just sort of a generic damage detection system?
So with respect to bacteria that invade the cytosol of cells, the best understood pathway is probably the galectin 8 NDP52 pathway that we discovered last year. And I should add that best understood is really a very relative term, as this is a young field and many important things remain to be found out. So I already mentioned that cells detect the damage of its internal membranes. And they do so by taking advantage of differences in the composition of their cytosol and the vesicle contents. On the one hand side, the cytosol is devoid of complex carbohydrates, while on the other hand, vesicles are full of glycoproteins and glycolipids. And cells can simply detect membrane damage by sensing the occurrence of glycans that have come out of the vesicles into the cytosol. And the receptor that detects damaged membranes is a cytosolic lectin, a carbohydrate binding protein, which is called galectin 8. So we consider galectin 8 a danger receptor. It surveys the integrity of the endosomal and also the lysosomal compartment, but in contrast to these toll-like receptors and other pattern recognition receptors that I mentioned earlier, galectin 8 does not detect pathogens directly. And also, since it accumulates on damaged vesicles, it may serve as another type of eat-me signal, very similar to the polyubiquitin that I mentioned earlier.
And so then how are those damaged vesicle components that are tagged by galectin 8 shunted into the autophagy pathway?
Well, NDP52 really is an adapter molecule, and it brings together the isolation membranes and the autophagy cargo and brings them together into very close proximity. With its N-terminal half, NDP52 binds to a ubiquitin-like molecule, which is called LC3C, that sits on the isolation membrane, while on its C-terminal side, it detects cargo-associated eat-me signals. Now, NDP52, as far as I know, is the only cargo receptor that sees two different types of eat-me signals. It binds to the polyubiquitin coat of bacteria via its very C-terminal zinc finger, and it also binds to galectin 8, bound to the damaged membranes, via a galectin 8 binding site that is right next to the zinc finger.
NDP52 can bind both to the polyubiquitin eat-me signals, but it can also bind to galectin 8. Is it specific for galectin 8, or can it bind to other galectins?
Now, it is very specific to galectin 8, and that's actually the beauty of what we have found in our structure. The structure explains very nicely why NDP52 is specific for galectin 8 only.
And so you solve the crystal structure of NDP52 bound to galectin 8. What did that crystal structure reveal about how NDP52 is specific for galectin 8?
Well, actually, the structure was solved by our collaborators in China, by Cai Li and Yunyu Li's lab. And Michael Wandel and I, we got involved a little later trying to help interpreting the structure and also to establish its biological significance. So galectins consist of either one or two carbohydrate recognition domains, and such domains had been crystallized before, and they were well known to form banded beta sandwich structures, which on their concave side bind the glycan ligands. And it was ever very interesting to see that NDP52 bound to the opposite side, the concave side, and far away and not interfering with glycan binding at all. Now, the region in NDP that binds to galectin 8 is probably unstructured in solution. And only upon binding to galectin 8, it forms a hook-like structure that very strategically positions several side chains, thereby allowing hydrophobic contact with galectin 8. Now, as I mentioned earlier, the specificity of NDP52 for galectin 8 is probably the most interesting aspect of our structure. At least to me it is. So there are about a dozen galectins in the human genome, several of which have even two carbohydrate recognition domains. So the question is very obvious. Why would NDP52 bind only the C-terminal domain of only galectin 8? And the answer is as simple as elegant. Galectin 8 provides a hydrophobic pocket for the NDP52 peptide, and at the bottom of that pocket lies an alanine, which is a very small hydrophobic amino acid. Now, this alanine is poorly conserved in other galectins. And it turns out that replacing it experimentally with any other residue occurring in this very same position in other galectin completely abrogates binding. So a lot of specificity between galectin 8 and NDP52 is simply due to sterical hindrance occurring in other galectins.
Galectin 8 is involved in the response to salmonella. What are those other galectins used for? Are they part of the response to different intracellular pathogens?
To be honest, we have no idea what these other galectins are used for. So what we have shown is we have shown that salmonella is restricted by galectin 8 in its ability to proliferate. But that doesn't mean that other bacteria are not detected by galectin 8 when they cause damage to the limiting membrane of their phylogosomes. In fact, we already know and we have published that other bacteria, even those that professionally dwell in the cytosol, for example, Listeria and Shigella flexneri, they are also detected by galectin 8 when they break out of their vesicles. And that is the whole beauty of having a receptor that surveys the integrity of a given compartment. Since galectin 8 detects damage to the compartment, and no matter what causes the damage, it can sense the entry of a whole range of different and completely unrelated pathogens. So in a sense, you could say galectin 8 would even detect pathogens that we may never have encountered in our evolutionary history before. And with respect to the other galectins, we know that others, for example, galectin 1 and 3 and 9, also detect damage to internal membranes, but we really don't know the function of these galectins. And I could imagine that different compartments or maybe different cell types may contain very selective ligands for other galectins, or that such ligands are generated during stressful conditions. We really don't know, but I hope time will tell.
Dr. Randall, thank you for speaking with me.
It was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
That was Felix Randall, senior author of a paper that appears in the current issue of Science Signaling. That paper is by Lee and colleagues, and it's titled Sterical Hindrance Promotes Selectivity of the Autophagy Cargo Receptor NDP52 for the Danger Receptor Galectin 8 in Antibacterial Autophagy. And that wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. The show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, Advancing Science, Serving Society. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for listening.